course I have. I get most of our jobs through Lady Constance. She makes social butterflies look like shut-in moths. The woman knows everyone, and everyone knows her. She's native to Warwick. She has connections in Maranon, but prefers the parties here in Melengar.
Wasn't she the one who hired us for the Hemley job? The one with Lady Martell's diary? Royce asked.
Albert nodded.
But she wasn't procuring the diary for herself, right?
I believe that, so. Just as I represent you, Lady Constance acts as a liaison for her people. Clients. Friends. However you want to refer to them. She's never said anything, but I assume she adds a surcharge and pays us the difference. She has to make a living somehow.
Isn't she a noble?
Yeah, well, given the straits you found me in, you should know that not all nobles are rich. She was married to Baron Linder of Maranon. Why, I don't think even she could say. He had no lands, wasn't wealthy, and not even particularly attractive.
Wasn't? Is he dead?
Yes. In addition to his other shortcomings, he apparently lacked skill with a lance. He was killed by Sir Gilbert of Lyle in a Wintertide joust, just 6 months after they married. How she manages to maintain such a lavish lifestyle is a mystery to everyone at court, and a topic of much speculation. He paused in thought. I wonder what rumours circulate about me.
He waved the question away.
Anywho, I'm guessing she's made herself as useful to her acquaintances as I've been to you.
You never asked her about it.
Albert looked shocked and insulted at the same time. Oh, dear Maribon, no. And she has never asked me about my affairs. We have a perfectly wonderful lack of curiosity about each other, which makes working together not only possible, but delightful as well.
You slept with her, Hadrian said,
his tone neither critical nor approving. He was merely stating a conclusion. Albert let slip a mischievous grin. Along with our lack of curiosity, we share an obvious absence of morals and a mutual aversion to cumbersome attachments. But filling that void is a healthy appetite for lust. It's a wonderful arrangement. Two peas in a pod, are we?
Royce, whose tiring hand reminded him that he was still holding his pack, looked around for a place to set it down.
Mindful that the bottom was still wet with muck, he placed it on the hearth near the crackling fire.
So, you have no idea who actually hired us to steal that diary?
Nope. Can't say that I do.
And Virgil Puck?
Well, that's a different matter now, isn't it? Of course it was Lord Hildebrand. Otherwise it would be terribly awkward when you arrived with him and—
Albert's eyes shifted as he fit the puzzle pieces together.
Albert was a fine intermediary. He'd a handsome face that polished up well, and he knew all the finer points of etiquette required to sail the dangerous waters of the Averan aristocracy. He was competent and well-spoken, but suffered the illness of all nobles. A dulling of the senses due to privilege.
Pets suffered from the same disorder. Having grown up in a household, a dog couldn't be expected to live in the wild any more than a cow or chicken. Domesticated creatures lacked basic situational awareness, that fearful, ever-present state of expected catastrophe that kept the less pampered alive. Watching Albert, Royce saw him questioning his foundations, and knew what was running through his head.
No. That sort of thing happens to other people. Not me.
So, Puck was telling the truth. He didn't have anything to do with Bliss Hildebrand. Guess I'm a better judge of people than you on this one.
Hadrian beamed a smile, which didn't last long. Royce guessed it faded just as soon as his partner realized he had helped kill an innocent man. Royce knew better. Puck wasn't innocent. No one was. He'd done something to someone, and the only thing Royce wanted to know was whether that something was going to rub off on him.
So, who killed Virgil, and why?
Hadrian asked.
Won't ever find out, Royce replied. It's a double blind. Quadruple, if you add in Albert and Constance. We apprehended the poet under trumped-up allegations. Nothing dire enough to arouse suspicion, even from someone like me. Then, a second group was hired to do the killing, and probably they were told an entirely different story. All of which makes it incredibly difficult to trace the responsible party or determine the actual motive.
Well, not to be insensitive to Mr. Puck and his demise, but...
Albert looked over at the coins.
I'm in dire need of a new doublet and breeches. It's important to keep up appearances, you know, and...
Go ahead, Royce nodded. Take a tenant, but the new outfit will have to wait. We still need to pay Gwen for the use of the room and catch up on our late stable fees.
Well then, we're in luck, because I already have another job lined up.
Not through Lady Constance, I hope. I prefer something a little more straightforward. A job where I know what I'm getting into before I step in.
No. This one didn't come from Constance, but it's...
Albert paused.
Unusual.
Royce folded his arms. He'd had his fill of unusual.
How so?
Well, normally, I have to poke around and look for work. But this fellow came to me, or rather he came looking for you.
Albert looked pointedly at Royce.
Me?
This unusual was sounding worse by the second. Albert nodded.
He's staying in the gentry quarter. Wouldn't give me a name or even tell me what it was about.
He said he'd know when you returned, and he'd stop by then.
He would know.
Albert nodded.
That's what he said.
Well, doesn't that just make me feel all warm and cozy? Did he mention how he knew I was living in Mellengar, or how he knew me, period?
Nope.
Only said he was from Colnora, and was looking for...
Albert paused to think.
It was a strange name, one that made me think of a cleaning service. He didn't mention Rhaera, but when I did, he recognized the word. I wish I could remember what it was.
Albert furrowed his brow further in concentration.
Don't worry about it,
Royce told him, and wished he could take the same advice. But he knew all too well that the stranger from Colnora had called him Duster.
Chapter 3 The Whiskey Baron.
It took only a few hours for the mystery man to show up at the Rose and the Thorn. They had time for baths and a hot meal. Hadrian was able to down 2 tankards of beer, but Royce wanted to stay clear-headed. Normally, he unwound after a job with a glass or two of Montmorency, and he was annoyed the wine would have to wait. Albert had Gwen seat the potential client in the Diamond Room, which had been kept empty of other patrons to give them privacy. He sat in the bag, an elderly man with grey hair and a face as salty and rugged as a seaside cliff. He wasn't tall. If he stood, Royce suspected they might be the same height. He was, however, big. More than stocky, and even larger than portly. The man eclipsed the chair in which he sat, and strained the seams of his travelling clothes. The tunic he wore had double stitching and metal studs, which decorated the floral designs across his chest. A heavy cloak lay tossed over the back of the chair beside him. Made of a thick 2-ply wool, the wrap looked new. He had gloves, too, expensive calfskin. They rested on the table near the cloak. Each had the same floral design as his tunic. A matched set, Royce thought. The visitor watched Royce and Hadrian enter, as if studying them for later recall. He didn't bother getting up or offer to shake hands. He patiently waited as Royce and Hadrian took their seats on the stools opposite him, not saying a word. He focused on Royce.
Is it you? Are you just... Royce cut him off with a raised hand. I don't use that name anymore.
The man nodded.
Fair enough. What should I call you, then?
Royce will do. And the big fella is Hadrian.
Each gave a nod of acknowledgement.
Who are you?
Royce asked.
I am a man who lived in Colnora during the Year of Fear.
Royce let his hand slip off the table. Beside him, Hadrian placed both feet flat on the floor to either side of his stool. The old man didn't appear formidable in any sense, but the look in his eyes was unmistakable. Revenge.
He wanted it, and he'd come to get it.
Name's Gabriel Winter.
Royce knew the name, but had yet to make the connection. And as far as he could recall, he'd never tangled with anyone named Winter.
You terrorized Colnora. The entire city was paralyzed from the horror you wrought. Pushcart people, street sweepers, shop owners, business barons. Everyone right up to the magistrate was terrified. Even brave Count Simon fled to Equesta that summer. That did a lot for morale, I can tell you.
The fat of the man's neck quivered as he spoke, but his eyes never wavered, and his voice remained steady and calm. Both hands stayed in plain sight. 10 pudgy fingers, palms on the table beside the empty gloves and half-melted candle. Nothing else lay between Royce and Winter but the tabletop. No cup or mug. He hadn't ordered a drink. The diamond room was quiet. Not part of the original inn, the room had been recently built to accommodate the tavern's growing popularity. The addition filled the oblong space between the Rose and the Thorn and Medford House, and gave the place its diamond shape. The only sounds came from 2 barmaids cleaning mugs in the other room.
What do you want?
Royce asked, as his fingers entered the front fold of his cloak and slipped around the handle of Alverstone.
I want to hire you.
It shouldn't have surprised Royce. Albert had described the man as a potential client. But so much about the meeting was worrisome.
Hire me?
Yes,
the man replied with curt candor, a hint of a smile on his lips, as if he knew a secret or the punchline to a joke that had yet to be revealed.
To do what?
Exactly what you did in Colnora. Only this time, I want you to make the city of Rochelle bleed.
Hadrian shifted in his seat, his feet coming off poised footings.
Why?
The man pushed back from the table, folding his arms across his chest as if contemplating what to say next, or maybe just working himself up to say it.
Some things didn't come easy. Royce understood that well enough,
and from the miserable expression on the man's face, he guessed that whatever he was about to say, this might be the first time he'd put it into words.
My wife died 10 years ago. Just been me and my daughter since then. Good girl, my Jenny. Faithful, loyal, a hard worker, quick as a whip, and tough as leather. We did well together, the two of us. She got me through the tough times, and there were plenty of those. But less than 4 months back, she went off with a nobleman from Rochelle, fellow named Leo Hargrave.
Hadrian leaned forward.
Leopold Hargrave? That's him.
Royce raised a questioning brow at Hadrian.
He's the Duke of Rochelle. It's in Auburn, southeast of here. I was in King Reinhold's army down that way before I shipped off to Calais. Reinhold is dead,
Winter said.
The King of Auburn has died?
Him and his whole family. Bishop Tynewell is going to crown a new king come the spring festival. Jenny wrote me all about it. She wrote me 3 days a week ever since the wedding. Then nothing.
The man frowned, his sight falling to the surface of the table, where he scraped at a worn spot with his thumbnail, trying to tear back a splinter.
Royce nodded.
So, what? You think she's dead? I know she is.
Because she's late in sending letters, Hadrian said.
The woman just got married. She's in a new city. Very different city. And she's a duchess now. Might be a tad busy. Or maybe she sent letters and the courier was lost in the snows. It's not spring yet, and those mountain passes can be treacherous. You're jumping to conclusions.
Gabriel Winter looked into Hadrian's eyes.
I did receive a letter, but not from my Jenny. Hargrave wrote to say she's disappeared.
Oh, well, disappeared is... It's not good, but it doesn't mean she's dead.
Yes, it does.
His stare was cold and harder than granite.
I told her what would happen. She just wouldn't listen. The only reason Hargrave married Jenny was for her dowry. He doesn't love her. Never did. But Jenny, she loves him, see? From the top of her head to the tip of her toes, she does. Don't know why. She's always been so sensible in the past. And this Hargrave... Well, the man is noble. That should have told her everything right there. I tried to stop her, but how could I? He's all she ever wanted. That's what she told me. My Jenny. She's not what you would call pretty. Even as wealthy as we are, no one ever came knocking on her door. She was getting up there in age. We'll be 33 in the fall, and, well, when the Duke asked for her hand, it was like offering the gift of flight to a chicken. She couldn't see past the dream. Hargrave killed her all right. Him and his ilk. That was his plan from the start. I saw it in the man's eyes. He was using her.
Gabriel turned to Royce.
I'd go there myself, but...
He spread his arms.
I'm old and fat. I never was that good with a knife. What could I do to avenge my darling daughter? Nothing. As a father, I'm incapable of doing the deed myself. But as a businessman...
He pointed at Royce.
I have the means to pay others to be my hands.
Businessman. That clicked the tumbler, and Royce finally knew who he was talking to, and how the man knew where to find him.
Winter's Whiskey. That's me.
It was Hadrian's turn to raise a questioning brow. Royce clarified.
One of the business barons of Colnora, the ones who actually run the city. Nobles appointed by the King of Warwick are supposed to administrate, but they rule like a barnacle commands a ship. The real control resides in the hands of the magnates who live in the Hill District, men like Delures, the Buchants, and Gabriel Winter, purveyor of fine liquors and quality spirits. My neighbour is Cosmos Delure. He was kind enough to provide me with your change of address.
I guessed as much.
My money has bought me all manner of comforts, but right now, the only thing I want is revenge.
Have you tried contacting the Duke?
Hadrian asked.
Of course I have. What did he say? His scribe wrote that Hargrave was investigating the matter. Investigating the matter. Oh, I'm sure he's looking real hard, given he's the one who killed her.
You know that for a fact?
Hadrian stared in shock.
I know it as well as you're sitting here. I told Jenny he only wanted her money. Guess he didn't need my girl once his debts were paid. No reason to keep her. Nobles aren't like you and me. No loyalty, no civility. They behave all righteous and proper, but it's just an act.
Gabriel turned to Royce.
Will you make them suffer the way you did in Colnora?
Expensive, Royce said.
You know who I am, what street I live on. I can afford it, and I want blood. I'll give you 50 gold for your time, and another 25 for every life you take, double if they suffer.
Hadrian dragged a hand down his face.
All this talk of blood and bodies. She could still be alive.
Gabriel started to speak, and Hadrian put a hand up to stop him.
Granted, it doesn't look good, and it does sound like something bad has happened to her, but she might not be dead. Could be she's locked up somewhere. Killing a duchess is dangerous, even if she's new to the family.
Gabriel thought about this for a moment.
Fine. I'll pay 150 yellow stamped with Ethelred's ugly head if you find, rescue, and bring Jenny back alive. But if she's dead, my original offer stands.
Depending on the extent of involvement, this job might prove costly, even for you.
Gabriel Winter's rage returned. He made fists on the table.
I have a lot of money, but only one daughter. And if she's gone, what need have I for gold?
He wiped his eyes.
Make that goddamn duke and all those working for him bleed. Turn the Roche River red for me. For me and my Jenny.
How far is it? Royce asked.
Hadrian stuffed the round of fresh bread in the small sack tied around the horn of Dancer's saddle. This was his quick access bag, where he kept his travel essentials for riding. Gloves, some peanuts, 3 strips of jerky, a rag, a few apples, cedar grease to keep the bugs away, a tinder kit, and a needle and thread.
The loaf was fresh out of the oven and still warm. Though he'd just finished a fine breakfast, Hadrian knew the odds of the loaf surviving even the short distance to the Gateway Bridge were slim. He considered stuffing it into the big leather bags behind his saddle, but the loaf would be crushed there. And that was no way to treat a gift from Gwen.
To Rochelle? He asked.
I don't know. 5, 6 days, maybe? Assuming the mountain pass is clear.
Which it should be, since Gabriel Winter has been getting letters from there.
We'll have to cross the eastern side of the Majestics.
And we'll need to skirt around Colnora,
Royce reminded, while he finished tying down the last of his gear across the rump of his horse.
Will it be hot down there?
Hadrian considered this. Rochelle was nearly as far south as Dulgarth, but the regions didn't share the same climate. Dulgarth had the most magnificent weather of anywhere he'd been. In contrast, Ulburn, as he remembered, was a cold, wet place.
Bring your heavy cloak and boots. Already have them.
When do you think you'll be back?
Gwen asked. She stood on the porch of Medford House, along with Jolin, Abby, and May, all out to see them off. The sun was just rising, and, except for Gwen, the girls were still in their nightgowns and wrapped in blankets. Behind them, painters set up scaffolding to continue turning the Medford House blue.
Might be a while,
Royce said, his voice soft, regretful. Gwen met him in the street, and the two stood an arm's length apart.
Hadrian watched and waited, as did the girls.
This job could be more complicated than the one we did in Marinon. More, well, I don't know. Just more.
Royce held on to the lead of his horse, the distance between him and Gwen remaining undiminished.
Don't get worried if we aren't back for, I don't know, could take several weeks. Let's just say that, okay?
Gwen nodded.
We'll say that, then.
Right.
Royce didn't move, just stared at her. A moment, maybe 2, went by. And Hadrian considered whether Royce would ever move. Wondered if he could. Hadrian couldn't understand what prevented his partner from hugging and kissing her goodbye. Then he remembered this was Royce he was watching. And it all made sense.
Right,
Royce said again, and nodded. He then led his horse down Wayward Street, and Hadrian followed.
The trip was quiet. Hadrian didn't even attempt to chat. Over the last 3 years, they'd gone through various conversational stages. Initially, Hadrian sought to draw Royce out, mistaking silence for social awkwardness. This served only to irritate Royce, who refused to be manipulated into doing anything, even talking. Hadrian then tried pretending Royce was a normal person who simply couldn't speak. Thus, Hadrian took it upon himself to fill the many hours of slow travel with his own meanderings and, When needed, he would supply both sides of a conversation.
Royce had silently endured this. Given that Hadrian felt some of his musings were insightful, even entertaining, his companion's muted reaction irked him. Once, Hadrian had performed an improvisational debate between a work-obsessed honeybee and a flighty dandelion that ought to have resulted in a stirrup-standing ovation. But Royce had ignored it completely, which caused Hadrian to wonder, why am I doing all the work? Several hours after setting out for Rochelle, Hadrian finally concluded that it wasn't his job to entertain Royce. If the thief was too self-absorbed to participate in a simple conversation, then fine. They would ride in silence. Hadrian hung back, nibbling bread, waving to the milkmaids and making silly faces at the boys herding sheep. He sewed up a hole in the thumb of his glove, and after he spotted a hawk that failed to catch a field mouse on its third attempt, he managed to stop himself from commenting on the bird's need for spectacles. And so it was that they rode the entire day without a word between them. For the most part, they followed the old South Road, which was also called the Culnora or Medford Road, depending on where one lived. As far as roads went, this was one of the best. Wide, firm, and mostly straight, it ran through a dignified countryside of respectable forests and friendly fields. Farms and small villages appeared, with names like Wyndham and Fallon Mire, places not unlike where Hadrian was born. Just before sunset, Royce led them off the road and into a small stand of trees, without saying a word. Silently, he tied his horse, unsaddled her, and removed his gear. Hadrian waited for the thief to say something, anything, but once his gear was in place, Royce went off on his usual security patrol and wood-gathering ritual. "It's like he's forgotten we're here," Hadrian whispered to Dancer as he tethered her to a branch. "Do you think he's mad at me?" Hadrian shook out his bedroll and laid it on what looked to be a soft patch of grass, still matted from winter's recent retreat. While the surface looked dry, he discovered the ground was actually quite wet. So he went back for the tar-covered canvas to lay beneath his blankets. "Do you know anything I might have done?" he whispered to Dancer as he scanned the trees, looking for Royce. "Quiet is one thing, but it's like we're on our way to the Crown Tower again." He clapped the horse on the neck. "We left you tethered in a field, and Royce was unconscious while I floated down an ice-cold river. Not a good time for any of us, was it?" When Royce returned with an armful of wood, he sported his usual miserable expression. The light was nearly gone, the camp set, and Royce still hadn't said a word. Hadrian wondered just how long the silence would last. "He's going to have to say something eventually. Maybe he'll ask where the bread is." While Hadrian had saved half the loaf for Royce, he planned to respond that he'd eaten it all because Royce hadn't said he wanted any. After lighting the fire, Royce sat down on his blankets and watched the flames. "I'm not making a meal until he says something. He's going to have to ask. He's going to have to open his mouth and say, 'Well, are you going to make something or what?'" He didn't. Royce continued to sit and stare, as if he'd never seen fire before. "Oh, for the love of Maribor!" Hadrian got up and dug through the food bag. "I can't believe he's—" "I'm not mad at you," Royce said. Hadrian glanced at Dancer, showing her a guilty expression. "He heard that?" Royce's hearing was unusually acute, but Hadrian hadn't known it was that good. "Why so quiet, then?" Royce shrugged, which Hadrian knew was a lie. "Is it the job?" Royce shook his head. "Best we've had in ages." "Are you upset this Cosmos person knows you're in Medford?" "No, I would have been shocked if he didn't know." "So, what is it?" Another lying shoulder roll was followed by an unnecessary adjustment of his blanket. Hadrian gave up and set the pot on the fire. Then he searched for the lump of lard which always managed to find its way to the bottom of the pack.
"Do you think she likes me?" Royce asked.
"Gwen?"
"Yeah."
His arm still in the pack, Hadrian looked over.
"Is this a trick question? Is there more than one Gwen?"
"I know she likes us, but she likes everyone, doesn't she? Even Roy the sewer."
Royce got to his feet and threw a stick at the fire with enough force to burst forth a cloud of sparks. Roy traded his trousers she'd given him for a bottle. They're nearly froze in the street. But she still smiles at him, still gives him free food.
She's a nice person, obviously. But
she likes you, Royce. And yes, more than Roy the sewer.
Hadrian rolled his eyes at the absurdity.
Royce stared back, his brow knitted tighter than a miser's purse.
"Are you serious?" Hadrian asked.
"Do I look like I'm joking?"
Hadrian had to admit his friend did appear grave, even more than usual.
"She's always so nice. Makes me feel..."
Hadrian waited, shocked that Royce might finish such a sentence. He didn't.
"It's just that most people consider me... well, you know. If Medford took a vote for the person to avoid the most, it'd be a toss-up between me and old Roy the Pantless Wonder."
"Wait."
Hadrian forgot the lard and walked back around the fire.
"I always assumed... but... what are you saying? I mean, you two have kissed, haven't you?"
"Kissed?"
Royce glared.
"No. By Mara, are you insane? What kind of question is that? Gwen is... she's a woman who'd probably like you to kiss her."
Royce sat back down on his bedding, his eyes tense, angry, his hands clenched with unconscious energy.
"So you two haven't done anything?"
"What do you mean by anything?"
"I mean, I've hugged her,"
Royce declared proudly.
"That wasn't what I meant, but have you? Have you really? Or did she hug you and you didn't cringe? Because that's not the same thing, you know. Look, just because you're quick to... this isn't about me, and it isn't about Roy the sewer either. The woman's in love with you, Royce. And don't tell me you don't feel the same."
Hadrian shook his head. "You can't stand leaving her, and can't wait to get back.
The two of you act as if you're already married, still in that honeymoon phase too. I just don't understand it. You're normally so..."
He paused.
"Oh, that's why you're so quiet. You're not mad at me. You're angry with her."
"I'm not."
"Yes, you are. You're angry at Gwen because she ruined your perfect little world. Everything was so neat and orderly, all painted the same color of black. Now she's gone and made a mess by spilling hope and sunshine all over the place.
You're in love with her, and it's killing you, isn't it?"
Royce didn't answer.
"Admit it. You love Gwen, and it scares you.
You're terrified because you've never loved anyone before."
The hood came up, as it always did.
"That's not an answer, you know." "Yes, it is."
Chapter 4. Rochelle. Rolling hills and quaint farms disappeared as Royce and Hadrian headed into the majestic mountains. The jagged, snow-swept peaks that ran from the Cenon uplands to Amber Heights divided Warwick from Alban, west from east, new from old. As always, Royce left the road to avoid the city of Colnora, maintaining his truce with the Black Diamond Thieves Guild. They found the byway again near the Gula River and followed it to Ulburn rather than risk the snows of the Amber Heights Pass. Crossing to the far side of the Majestics, they entered a different world. The landscape reflected the transition. Rolling green hills turned into jagged mountains, river gorges, and ocean cliffs. Oaks and maples became pines and junipers. Snow reappeared in the higher elevations, and dense fog hugged the seaside. The population was isolated in pockets. Valley villages, they were called,
and Royce and Hadrian had passed through several of these hamlets without stopping.
The local folk didn't seem to like strangers.
Is that it?
Royce asked, as the two sat astride their mounts, looking at a city clutched in a river valley below. Although the town wasn't as sprawling as Colnora, the buildings were packed tighter and appeared taller. Hadrian and Royce were still miles away, and from that distance, and at that height, the place looked peaceful. Surrounded on three sides by snowy peaks, and the open ocean on the fourth, it looked idyllic.
I think so, Hadrian replied. I haven't actually been there. But that's definitely the Roche River, and the city of Rochelle is supposed to be where it meets the sea, or the bay, I guess. The Goblin Sea is farther east. I think this, he pointed to the cliff beside them, which dropped to an ocean inlet where waves announced the incoming tide, is called Blythen Bay. At least it was 6 years ago. And I don't know why they would have changed the name.
By then, the two had been on the road for 5 days, always camping and avoiding cities or towns. The trip had been warm and dry, but according to the sky, all that was about to change. The hood tilted upward, scanning the darkening sky.
Bad weather on the way. Best get down there.
What do you know of this place?
I never came to Rochelle. I was only in Albon for a few months. That was when I served in the military for King Reinhold. Most of that time I was bivouacked up on Ember Heights. I spent my days watching Chadwick's 1st Regiment, waiting for them to invade.
Why just a few months?
Because less than a year before, I was in that same regiment. Lord Belstrad, the commander, gave me a medal for my part in the 2nd Battle of the Villan Hills. I knew all those men. Several were my friends. And everyone knew old Clovis was itching to attack Ulburn and take the heights. So I left. Disappeared in the middle of the night.
Hadrian looked east across the inlet, to where he could just make out the far coast. A thin green line, fading in a rising mist.
I shipped over to Gallianon, and kept right on going, all the way to Calais. Amber Heights wasn't the first time I faced the prospect of fighting past friends, so I figured if I went far enough away, it couldn't happen again.
Did it?
No, Hadrian sighed. Instead, I only slaughtered strangers.
Hadrian expected a quip from Royce, or at least a snide comment. The hood was silent.
So, I can't say I know much about Ulburn, even less about Rochelle. As a whole, about the only thing I remember is it being odd.
Odd.
Unfriendly. Secretive. And above all, superstitious.
The East is different. Those who live in the sunset shadow of the majestic mountains are peculiar, and not in a good way.
You'll see. None of my memories of Ulburn are good ones, but... well, I can't say as I recall much that was good from those years. Maybe I'm biased.
Good to hear you don't have fond memories, given the nature of this job.
What do you mean?
We're not here for a social call.
None of this helping to save people or advising nobles. We are here to hunt.
Been a while since I did wet work.
There's a certain clarity that comes with executions.
We're not here to kill anyone, Hadrian said. We've come to rescue the Duchess.
Royce drew back his hood to look at Hadrian. Or maybe it was merely so Hadrian could see the mocking smile.
You understand Winter's daughter is dead, right?
Hadrian shook his head.
No, I don't.
Royce's eyes widened.
The Duke of Rochelle married her for her money, then arranged a convenient accident to rid himself of the excess baggage. He's probably done it before, and he'll likely do it again with another rich daughter, or perhaps an elderly widow. You don't know that!
They reached a ridge where the trail twisted down a narrow pass, which was steep enough that the rocks kicked by the horse's hooves started a tiny cascade. Seabirds cried overhead, and the wind coming off the water howled.
Of course I do. Gabriel Winter was right. Dukes don't marry middle-aged, ugly merchants' daughters for love. He wanted the money. That's how the world works. People are motivated by money, power, security, and... well, that's pretty much it. Actually, when you think about it, they're all variations on the same theme. So, you don't believe in love? Love is another word for lust or dependence. People confuse it with all sorts of other things, fantasies and wishful thinking mostly. Oh, really? Hadrian urged his horse to catch up, as Royce's mare had a tendency to inch ahead. Then tell me, O wise one, was it lust or dependence that caused you to risk your life to rescue Gwen from prison? And what fantasy or wishful thinking drove Gwen to hide and nurse us back to health, despite the danger? Royce urged his horse ahead. Oh, and tell me, Sir Genius, why is it you can't remember your own name when she's around, but you haven't dared to kiss her? The hood came up again. That's still not an answer.
The city of Rochelle proved to be a congested hive of activity. Carts, wagons, and carriages packed cobblestone streets trapped between tall buildings. The soaring stone architecture, with its pointed arches and ornate facades, made Hadrian feel small, and not merely in size. Like the cathedral in Medford, the grandeur here left him feeling unworthy and unwanted, which was one of the reasons Hadrian never had much interest in religion. The sun hadn't quite set, and yet the shadows of the buildings created a premature night on the streets below. Crowds moved through pools of radiance cast by illuminated shop windows. Among the men with walking sticks and ladies in gowns strolling the sidewalks, Hadrian spotted dark-skinned laborers in eastern garb and dwarven crafters bustling along the gutters. A man on stilts and a boy with a spitting torch cut through the mob, lighting street lamps. A lady in a lavish cloak walked a tiny pug-nosed dog on a leash, making Hadrian think of Lady Martell and Mr. Hipple. A pair of men in red and blue military uniforms moved casually up the street while a matching pair moved down the other side, eyes watchful and suspicious. The smell of wood smoke, roasting meats, and baked pies filled the air. Throngs stopped to peer into the bright shop windows or surrounded peddlers' carts, waving hands over their heads to catch the merchants' attention. Horses' tacks jingled, hooves clapped stone, bells rang, fiddlers played jaunty tunes, and barkers shouted about cheap shoes and shows about to start.
Come see the lizard man shed his skin on stage!
Conversations poured over one another such that words were lost in the exchange, and yet Hadrian still managed to notice the accent. More lyrical and sophisticated than Western dialects, the sound of the East was one of music and mystery. All of it served to remind him of a time he'd rather forget. He'd found such sights and sounds intoxicating as a youth, back when he was arrogant and stupid. Royce would argue he was still stupid, but his partner didn't know the pre-Calaean Haddy, the boy soldier with the skill of a man. What a cruel and absurd joke. The more ignorant you realize you are, the smarter you become. He glanced at Royce, whose hood panned left and right as he struggled to take everything in. Being overwhelmed was a common reaction for those who hadn't traveled in these parts. When it came to the East, there was always too much. Too much and yet never enough. A light rain began to fall as they entered the city. More a nuisance than a problem. But Hadrian suspected that might change as the drops multiplied, the sun set, and the air turned colder. This was something else he remembered. The weather was as unpredictable as the people. According to the stars, spring was less than a week away. But the cool air had a different opinion. Pulling his own hood up, Hadrian tightened the collar as he and Royce waited atop their horses, caught in the traffic of a busy street. Any idea where we should go? Royce asked, as the two waited side by side just to the rear of a carriage, which was stopped behind a wagon being unloaded.
I'm thinking an inn, or at least a tavern of some sort. I don't know about you, but I'm hungry. A lot of these stands sell food, Royce pointed out. That one is selling lamb, I think. It's nearly spring. Most vendors will have lamb. But let's get indoors. I'd prefer not to get soaked on a night that's already turning cold.
Hadrian looked down the street at signs for potential havens. Abernathy's Antique Apothecary. Boothman and Fuller Glass. Hinkle's Heart-Stopping Hats. Fisk and Pine Talismans, Amulets and Wards. Lots of shops, but no inns that I can see.
The wagon finished its delivery and rolled on. With no clear idea where to go, Royce and Hadrian followed the flow of traffic, trusting it the same way they sometimes relied on their horses to lead them to water. Much to Hadrian's amazement, the streets became even more congested as they reached a stone bridge. Wide as it was, the span across the Roche River was choked with traffic. Off to the right, a forest of ship's masts marked the location of the city's harbour, while ahead, and up on a hill, stood a grand estate behind a wall. Crossing the bridge, they discovered they were on an island. Traffic urged them around the walled manor and to another bridge. Crossing this second one, they found a large plaza, bordered by a huge cathedral and more shops. Although it didn't seem possible, this plaza was even more packed with people. A sea of heads bobbed along in a slow, flowing current. The architecture throughout the city was unusual and more pronounced near the center. Most buildings were constructed from stone and elegantly designed. Not only were they taller than the houses at the edge of town, but they had a grand quality, expressed in the many subtle flourishes and unnecessary accoutrements. Cupolas were numerous, as were spires. Even the smaller shops had an excess of fanciful gables. Doors were elaborately carved, as were supporting structures and the borders around windows. In towns like Medford, decorations of this sort would depict grapevines or flowers, but in Rochelle, grotesque, twisted faces peered out. Ornamental rain spouts were fashioned so that fantastic monsters, monkeys, lions, and nightmarish creatures belched forth the rain, now running from the slate-tiled roofs. Everything appeared ancient, worn, and weathered from centuries of storms. And everywhere was statuary. One statue literally stood head and shoulders above the rest. In the grand plaza, on the far bank of the Roche River, a monumental figure of a man loomed. Chiseled of pristine white marble, it stood 17 feet tall, and was as perfect a specimen of humanity as any Hadrian had ever seen. Lean, muscled, and youthful, the figure was carved with one shoulder down and a knee locked. A casual stance, so lifelike it could have been a giant covered in flour. The bare-chested man grasped a sword, point down, in his right hand. Novron, Hadrian guessed, and it wasn't a particularly difficult conclusion, seeing as how the statue was positioned directly in front of a massive cathedral. The figure sported all the traditional tropes of the demigod. Long hair, perfect physique, and the unmistakable sword. If it wasn't Novron, the Rochelle chapter of the Church of Nephron had some explaining to do. There! Royce pointed to a signboard. Black Swan Hostelry. They steered to the side, working their way out of the flow of people. Hadrian waited with the animals while Royce went in. He came back out only a few minutes later. No vacancy. Place is packed. They moved on to the Grey Fox Inn, and then the Hound's Tooth, and finally the Iron Crown. Every room was taken.
They have a waiting list, Royce explained, after returning with the bad news. A bunch of people are hoping that someone might leave.
Royce climbed back aboard his saddle, and in a quiet voice said,
"Fella inside told me our best bet is a place called the Dirty Tankard. Says it's up this way." Having drifted out of the more populated areas, Hadrian was both pleased and dismayed. Happy to be away from the press of the crowd, but uneasy as options ran out.
He'd hoped to find someplace soon, especially now that the rain was coming down harder. Crossing another smaller and less distinguished bridge, the two entered a neighborhood of equally narrow but darker streets. Shops were scarce, barkers and vendor carts completely absent. The dirty tankard lived up to its name. A dingy shack that reminded Hadrian of the hideous head before Gwen took it over and turned it into the much-improved Rose and the Thorn. Despite the tankard's run-down appearance, a line of people stretched out the door and wound down an oily street. Dismounting, Royce tied their mounts as Hadrian took a place in line. He could hear the rain on the inn's roof growing louder.
"It's the festival,"
the woman in front said to the man ahead of her. She pronounced the word
festival,
forcing Hadrian to puzzle it out.
"Always busy this time of year."
"Yes, but this is a special year, ain't it? Everyone coming."
"Don't know why. Not going to make no difference to most of these folks here now, is it?"
"Why are you here?"
"Same as you, to see how much a difference it doesn't make."
Royce rushed up, his hood taking on the shine it did when wet.
"When is the festival?"
Hadrian asked the group ahead of him. The woman turned, middle-aged and dark-skinned, shed bright, almond eyes. She gave the pair a puzzled look as she studied their clothes. She glanced at the horses tied to the nearby post.
"You looking for a place to stay?"
Hadrian and Royce both nodded.
"You don't want this place."
She spoke with the same conviction, as if they were all waiting in line before an executioner's block. More heads turned. Hadrian saw the face of the man she had been speaking to, and another woman looking back, all Calaeans. Ahead of them stood a pair of dwarves in traveling clothes, holding satchels over their shoulders.
"She's right. You don't belong here," one of the dwarves said. "You should be in the merchant district, or Old Town. This place,"
the dwarf hooked a thumb at the dirty tankard,
"is awful."
"We tried," Hadrian replied. "They're all full."
"There's a room on Mill Street."
The person who said this wasn't in line. She sat on the side of the road, her back up against the wall, wrapped in a sheet of worn sail canvas. She looked young, and Hadrian might have considered her a girl, except that in her lap lay a bundled child. Hadrian hadn't even noticed her until she spoke.
"Oh, I'm sorry. Were you in line?"
Hadrian apologized.
"No," she replied. "I'm not in line."
She said the words hesitantly, as if unsure whether he had been making a joke.
"Where is that room?"
Royce pressed. She pointed.
"An old woman lets it out. There's no sign, but it's available. Down there. The one with the blue shutters and a matching door. Just up the hill from the bookbindery. Back toward the merchant district."
Royce looked the way she gestured.
"If you know about this place, why are you sitting in the rain?"
He glanced at the child. "Why don't you take it? Is it expensive?"
This made several people in line laugh. "Where are you two from?"
the Calaean ahead of them asked.
"Not from here," Royce said pointedly. "Of course not. Wouldn't be talking to her if you were. Or me, I suppose."
"Wouldn't be waiting to get into the tankard either,"
one of the dwarves said.
"The lady who lets out the room on Mill Street is from here,"
the mother with the baby said, as if this explained everything. When she saw it didn't, she added,
"I could knock on her door all day, and she'd never open for the likes of me."
"Why not?"
Hadrian asked. The woman pulled back the sail canvas she'd used as a hood, revealing a pair of ears that narrowed dramatically at the top.
"No place in this city would rent me a room."
She put a hand on the back of her sleeping child.
"Not even the dirty tankard. Their bedbugs are too good for us."
She said this last part as a joke. She even laughed a little. A man came out of the shack, waving his arms over his head to get everyone's attention.
"We're full," he shouted. Go look someplace else.
The line let out a communal groan as they broke formation.
And it's gonna be a wet one tonight, the dwarf grumbled.
And cold, said the Calaean woman.
Royce looked at Hadrian, who shrugged.
What's this woman's name on Mill Street?
Dunno, the mother said, pulling her sailcloth back over her head, covering her ears.
Husband used to be a tax collector, which didn't make her popular. He died a few years back. Now she lets out the room. Not a friendly sort.
That makes two of us, Royce said. Mill Street was a narrow paved track with a series of brick and stone buildings so closely butted together that they formed an irregular pair of walls. Narrow balconies cast shadows on cobblestone, where rainwater had been trained to hug the curb. No trees, bushes, or grass broke the uniformity. This was a serious street, a proper, humorless precinct that didn't simply frown, it scowled. Even in that crowded city, Mill Street was vacant, an empty stretch of blinds and closed doors. Only one building had blue shutters. Near the center of the block, it stood three stories high, and had a pair of narrow-framed windows marking three floors, each endowed with a barren flower box, painted blue. An old-fashioned black-iron candle lantern illuminated the front door, which had also been painted the same sapphire hue. A brass knocker in the shape of a woodpecker perched in the center above a large grated window, its beak pressed against a plate. Just as the mother had mentioned, there was no indication of a room for rent.
You should let me do the talking,
Hadrian said, as he grasped the woodpecker. It made a surprisingly loud clack, clack, clack.
You're an awful negotiator, Royce replied, using the stoop to scrape mud off the edge of his boots. And far too generous. You let this old hag fleece us out of every copper.
See, that's just the sort of thing I think we ought to avoid. Old hag isn't the best way to approach a woman who might be willing to share her home with us.
Royce frowned. I wasn't going to say it to her face.
But that's what you're thinking.
She can't hear my thoughts.
Actually, it's sorta in your tone.
I don't have a tone. Royce directed his attention to the woodpecker. His hood was still up, and rain beaded on the surface, glistening with the lamplight. Besides, I'm a professional thief. I make a living by lying convincingly.
You scare people, Hadrian said. This old widow lives alone. She's not going to take chances renting to anyone who frightens her. She...
The door itself didn't open, but the brass-grated security window slid back. Behind, a thin and withered grey-haired woman appeared, her lips pursed. She clutched the collar of a shawl about her neck and peered out with trepidation. She spotted Royce first. He studied her for only a moment, then sighed and stepped aside, granting Hadrian the audience.
By the unholy twins, the old woman cursed.
She glared at both of them. Her eyes were large, sunken and bulbous, accentuated by arching brows that glared in judgment.
If you're looking for handouts, this isn't the door. If you're selling something, the merchant district is in the city center. If you're spreading news, I assure you I've already heard it. If you're dispensing trouble, believe me, I've all I need. Stocked full, I say.
Hadrian blinked, stunned.
Oh, my apologies.
She softened her voice, her brows drooping in understanding.
I see. You are nothing but a pair of idiots.
Off you go. Play in the rain. Leave the pretty bird on my door alone.
It's not real. It can't fly.
She shooed at them with frail fingers.
The river is that way. If you fall in, auto good that all your troubles will be over in short order. Good night and goodbye.
With a smile, she clapped the little window grate shut.
We're here for the room,
Hadrian shouted, his voice descending in volume with each word, accepting the defeat.
Well done, Roy said. He clapped slowly. I must admit she didn't appear the least bit frightened.